Calgary Mayor G.O.T. Gondek says never being able to own a home gives Canadians more freedom.
Recent immigrants to Canada lean towards voting conservative and disapprove of Justin Trudeau's record immigration targets, according to a new poll.
Legal scholars are sounding the alarm about the Liberals' online harms bill. Hello, Canada. It's Friday, April 19th, and this is the True North Daily Brief. I'm Cosmin Jirja.
And I'm William Macbeth.
We've got you covered with all the news you need to know. Let's discuss the top stories of the day and the True North exclusives you won't hear anywhere else. Calgary Mayor G.O.T. Gondek says the prospects of never owning a home and becoming a forever renter is a liberating experience. Gondek, who owns two properties in Calgary, made the comments during a discussion with the development company Round Square. According to Gondek's disclosure statement, the Calgary mayor owns two properties in Calgary, one in Panorama Hills and another downtown in East Village. Gondek recently faced a recall campaign following the Recall Gondek initiative. Campaign leader Landon Johnston is slated to hold discussions with Alberta Premier Danielle Smith regarding possible reforms to the province's recall laws. Johnston handed in a total of 72,271 collected signatures. The campaign required Johnston to gather signatures from 40% of Calgary's eligible voters, a total of 514,284 signatures. In the previous city election, Mayor Gondek secured 176,455 votes out of 393,090 ballots cast. Although the signature count fell short of the target, Johnston viewed the campaign as a success. He embarked on the effort single-handedly and initially did not anticipate garnering any signatures at all. So, William, Gondek here and her comments are quite strange, and I don't think she probably meant to say what she was saying here. Do you think what she said does any favors for her popularity?
Well, it's hard to say how she become any less popular. She's already deeply disliked in Calgary. But I think if you look at what she said, it's absolutely insane. The idea that people are choosing to rent rather than own is some sort of, I'm happier renting, it's a personal life choice, I don't want to own a home. That's absolute fallacy. People rent because they don't have the economic conditions, the job, the income, the savings to be necessary to buy a home. They don't rent because of some new lifestyle that exists where they prefer not to acquire an asset through their monthly housing payments. So I don't know exactly what she was thinking. It's a pretty insane statement to have made. And I think it shows how she's so out of touch with reality that she's now trying to spin these new lines about renting being a choice that people want to make rather than are making for economic reasons. And I think voters are going to see it, and it won't help her popularity at all.
A lot of people on social media were pointing out that this development company, Round Square, has a certain reputation. And apparently they have links and have funded counselors in the past. What sort of reputation does Round Square have in Calgary and Alberta?
The participation of developers in municipal elections isn't new. It's certainly one of the few ways that municipal candidates can secure funding. The other main way, of course, though, is through big unions, public sector unions, which is who paid for Gondek's campaign by and large. And so perhaps this is an example of Gondek trying to reach out and broaden her support base, find new donors for her next campaign. But I think in reality, if you're a home builder in Calgary, you would be looking at Mayor Gondek and thinking with concern, given how much she's been in favor of higher taxes, higher fees, more red tape, and other things that make doing business in Calgary much more expensive. Recent immigrants to Calgary are voicing concerns about high immigration levels and are more likely to support the Conservatives than any other political party, according to a recent Léger poll. Léger's poll surveyed over 2,100 Canadian adults who immigrated to Canada within the last decade. Among those surveyed, 42% said that the Liberals' current immigration plan will result in too many immigrants entering Canada. 34% felt the Liberals' plan would admit the right amount of immigrants, while 7% said it wouldn't bring enough immigrants. 17% of respondents said they did not know. The survey was prefaced by saying that Canada planned to welcome 465,000 immigrants this year, 485,000 in 2024, and 500,000 in 2025. The question said that Canada admitted over 437,000 immigrants in 2022. However, True North's Candace Malcolm previously reported that when calculating the amount of temporary foreign workers, international students, and illegal immigrants, Canada brings in about 2.2 million people per year. Even though the poll did not reflect this reality, a majority of recent immigrants still felt the 465,000 target was too high. So, Cosman, I think some people might be surprised to hear that recent immigrants believe that immigration levels to Canada are too high. They would see that possibly as a contradictory belief. But in your experience, have you found that actually immigrants are some of the groups in Canada who are the toughest when it comes to immigration, setting targets and the rules and requirements for entering Canada?
Yeah, well, look, I can explain this quite simply. I'm a first generation immigrant and I totally understand this sentiment. And I see it when talking to other immigrant communities. The reason why a lot of immigrants oppose high immigration levels is because it cheapens the immigration experience and actually makes it worse. The experience people had in 2002, 2003 when they immigrated to Canada is completely different to the one they have now. And not only does it do a disservice to new immigrants and newcomers, it does a disservice to Canadians and their ability to access services, healthcare, housing. So back in 2002 and 2023, it was a totally different world. The access to services you had and how you were able to come to Canada, immediately rent a three-bedroom apartment, get a job while you're training, you know, to get your specific certifications or whatever you wanted to do professionally. It was possible to do with a two-working parent family income. That's not the case anymore. Immigrants do not have that opportunity.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Legal scholars are sounding the alarm about the Liberals' online harms bill, raising concerns of excessive criminal penalties and oversight issues. During a webinar hosted on Wednesday by the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs, two legal experts raised significant concerns about the Canadian government's proposed Online Harms Act, Bill C-63. Emily Laidlaw, a cybersecurity expert and law professor at the University of Calgary, co-chaired the expert group that advised the federal government on developing the Online Harms Act. She was one of the panelists on the webinar alongside University of Ottawa professor Michael Geist. The lawyers, both of whom are Jewish, dissected the complexities of the proposed legislation, highlighting areas that could impede civil liberties and debating their views, which sometimes aligned, but also diverged. The theme of the webinar was unity, not uniformity, saying that while everyone may not agree with the opinions, they stood united. Geis said that the bill is best understood as two bills in one: the online harms piece involved in regulating large internet platforms and the things that take place on them, and the second bill, which includes changes to the Criminal Code and Canadian Human Rights Act. This focuses on hate and particularly individuals instead of platforms. Amendments to the Canadian Human Rights Act will allow anybody to file complaints against people posting hate speech with the Canadian Human Rights Commission. If found guilty, the tribunal can order that the content be taken down and impose fines of up to $70,000. Geis criticized the vague and expansive powers granted to the Digital Safety Commissioner, highlighting a serious gap in oversight and detailed regulatory guidelines. The Liberal government claimed that they consulted widely on this bill. And while there are some changes compared to when Section 13 was in place during the Harper era, and it was the Harper government that repealed that specific piece of legislation, it is pretty much the same bill. It does the same things, and in many ways, it actually goes even further, imposing life sentences for certain hate speech crimes. So, William, should Canadians be more alarmed by Trudeau's latest attempt to censor free speech and bring back this draconian system?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what the federal government, the federal Liberal government, has done over the past few years, it's implemented a whole series of bills designed to restrict, limit, or otherwise curtail free speech, freedom of expression. You know, their Online News Act, which had a serious impact on groups like True North, made it much more difficult for us to use digital media tools like Facebook and Instagram to connect with people. When it comes specifically to the Online Harms Act, it's more difficult because they've lumped so many different things under this one bill. There's a piece that talks about protecting children from online predators, online sexual exploitation. I don't think you'd find anyone in the country really opposed to that. And if it was a standalone bill, it would probably have bipartisan support. But when it comes to specifically the hate speech provisions, you know, when I worked in government and in opposition, we always said you should never pass a law that you would want to see on the books if your opponents were in power. And I think with this one, the liberals think, oh, well, this is a great law. We're going to have the ability to punish people who say, quote unquote, hateful things or spread, you know, online harm through hate speech. But what if there's a different government? Would they be as happy as if a conservative government could decide what counts as hate speech? And I think they would be very opposed. So the fact that the law in their mind only really works as long as they're in power, I think should be a worrying indicator for them. Overall, I think it's a bad piece of law. I think it's going to criminalize people who say unpopular opinions and who share their own views. And if those views don't align with what polite liberal society thinks, they're going to be accused of spreading hate speech. It should be sent back to the drawing board, or better yet, it should be tossed into the legislative trash heap.
That's it for today, folks. Make sure to check in at www.tnc.news throughout the day for all the news you need to know. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to share our work with your friends and neighbors. And if able, please consider supporting independent media at donate.tnc.news.